Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A shadow shall fall over the universe, and evil will grow in its path, and death will come from the skies.
Are you from around here?
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
What?
I don't know why I did that.
What?
I don't know. That was a weird glitch. Sorry, everybody. Welcome to Film Sack.
I wasn't prepared for that.
It's Stern's fault. Welcome to Film Sack, everybody. I don't know what happened there. This is Film Sack episode 551, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I am Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. He has a pretty hairy canyon done away.
Oh, look at it. Fly in there. It's mighty hairy. Oh, hi. Hi. Dirty D's drawn dirt cheap. Animation Studios of Canada. This is Richard Lochnar. How may I help you today? Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Yeah. Hold on a second. Hey, can any of you guys animate realistic boobies? Okay, I'm seeing hands going up, but I'm not sure any of these guys have ever seen real boobs. Robert, you seem super excited about this question. Describe boobs for me. Okay. Right. Well, you do seem to have a rudimentary idea of boobs. Can you name your sources? Your mom. Do you have pics? You do? Gross. But can you animate them 20 years younger in a way that defies gravity and common sense? Your pleasure. Well, that's a weird way to say it. Whatever. Happy Mother's Day to Robert's mom, and congrats on your freaky son. Anywho, is that all you needed? Uh-huh, right. Do we have experience drawing space aliens, snorting cocaine, and then driving? Well, I don't think that is something that we as a company can get behind. Hey, you know what? Whatever. I've already agreed to have Robert draw his mom's over-idealized boobs at 24 frames per second, and he's apparently already completed 20 minutes worth since we started this phone call. So bump it. Count us in, eh? Randy, stop looking at that reference material. We got a show to do.
Come on, man. There's 400 more boobs to make before our movie's over.
I think this is one where we can rewatch the movie while we're recording the podcast. I'm just saying.
Possibly. Speaking of that voice, it's Randy. Both his balls are green and glowing. Jordan.
Hello, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
My name is Harry Canyon. I was named for what my father was looking at when I was conceived. Pause for laughter. I live exactly 50 years in the future, and as you can imagine, everything has changed, but everything is exactly the same. The biggest change is, of course, that guys like me get laid all the time. Conventionally attractive women jump into bed naked with me, even though my face looks like Michael Chiklis wearing a Danny Trejo mask that's been left on top of a refrigerator that no one cleaned for several years. Whoa. Pause for laughter.
Yeah.
How do I get so much sex, you ask? Well, you're going to get it too if you just follow my three easy rules. Number one, be on the lookout for women in trouble, and then scoop them up and take them somewhere. That apparently makes them super horny with immediacy. It's science. Number two, when you identify a woman who wants to have sex, don't be charming. Don't be interested. Instead, act like you don't care one way or another, and they'll just take over. Number three.
Wow.
Just kill people with a disintegrating ray. Like, every day. Yeah. Kill people.
A lot.
Over the last 5 years, I've killed something like 3,000 people. Does that make me a wanted criminal or a feared madman? Nope. It just makes women horny for me. Pause for standing ovation.
Oh, I can't stand right now. I just watched this movie.
Yeah, how can you stand? I can't stand it either. Yeah. Oh, wait.
I hope I don't have to solve the math problem at the chalkboard.
Right,
no,
right, exactly.
Kidding. All right, with us also, and finally, Brian, he can't remember if the robot is circumcised or not. Ibbit.
I can't. Okay, so we've got a tight deadline, folks. Quiet down, quiet down. Let me tell you what we're going to be working on. I've assembled you all here because you're the youngest, most creative group of animators working here in Canada in the early 80s. Well, I'm here to tell you what you're all going to be working on. We're going to be creating a multi-segment animated film based on the magazine Heavy Metal. Will the soundtrack be all heavy metal, you ask? Oh, yeah. We've got Devo. We've got that guy from the Eagles. We've got the vocalist from Steely Dan. And we've even got Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac. How's that heavy metal for you? Anyway, you're not here for music. You're here because you're talented artists. So we're going to divide up into teams, and each one is going to work on a particular segment. All right. We've got a segment with a B-17 bomber full of zombies. Don't correct me, Randy. Who wants it? Okay, Team 5, you guys have some experience with war shorts. Great. All right, that one's yours. Next, we have a segment with two aliens snorting a lot of coke. Who wants this one? I think I heard a noise coming from that green cloud over there. Okay, I can't see you, but I'll assign that one to you guys. Lastly, we've got a story with a cab driver who picks up the daughter of a scientist who's killed over a ball of evil. Oh, wow, a lot of you wanting to work on this one. There's more. He takes her back to his apartment, and they have sex. So, yeah, there's a lot of female nudity. Wow, you guys all still have your hands up on this one? Okay. I assume all of you have seen a naked woman? Oh, wow. None of you? Okay. A little bit similar to Brian's, but...
how could you avoid it?
Yeah, how could you avoid it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too many
boobs. There was no way to avoid it.
I actually considered making my greeting, like speaking it as though I was the, you know, noir cab driver.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I realized it's going to take forever.
Yeah.
Like,
when you do that, that character, it's so slow. And like, that was I realized that became like my metaphor for the whole movie. It's like, this movie is only 80 minutes long.
Yeah,
right.
Short.
Mm-hmm. But everything feels, you know, like each of the segments feels like it's longer than it actually is.
I agree. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. It's a weird time, a weird running time compared to what it feels like when you're watching it. And so at its core, this is an anthology film that takes from some stories that were printed in Heavy Metal magazine. A lot of boobs in those as well. That was their famous for that.
Yeah, that was their whole jam. So you can't criticize the movie for like going out of a limb there or anything. That's where they were in there.
Yeah. If anything, they held back some because the magazine was borderline porn half the time. But this was a band in our house. Nobody could watch heavy metal and nobody could get the magazine. This was one of the things in our house where you were like, nope, sorry, not available to you. You know, and this was 81, so I was, 11 or 12? So I couldn't do it, but I ended up seeing it when I was 15 with some friends, VHS, I guess. And twice, maybe, total, and then this is my third time. And I apparently remembered nothing, but I knew there were boobs. I didn't know there were this many boobs. I don't remember this many.
Right.
There's so many. Yeah. So many boobs.
Oh, well, you saw it 15. I was taken to the movie theater by my Uncle George and my cousins, Johnny and Georgie, who both pot smokers there.
Yeah.
As an 11-year-old.
What?
Yes, exactly. Hey, Mom, we're going to go see cartoon. Be back later.
Yeah. I know, right?
And that day I became a man.
A man-child, maybe.
You know, like, I really, to show you how much I did not know about this movie, I sat down to watch it with my 12-year-old.
Oh my God. No, get out of here.
Because, I mean, for a couple of reasons. One, like, the cast. I'm just looking at the cast.
Yeah, John Candy.
And I'm just like, oh, this, okay. So I kind of thought I understood how this movie would go.
You were thinking Meatballs, right? Something like that.
And then what I hadn't done is looked into like the context of the stories, right? I had just only like looked at like the top half of the Wikipedia page for the movie. And so I sat down to watch this thing, and I had a you know, we were given a DVD of it, which I had dug out. And for some reason, within the first 10 seconds of the movie, my Xbox that I was watching it on decided that it was going to turn off.
Okay.
And so, like, I was like, oh, okay, well, let's see, maybe I could, if that's going to be a problem, maybe I can like push it onto a thumb drive or something. And while I was doing that, I was just like looking at IMDb. I'm like, oh, it's R-rated. And then the more I read, I realized, oh wow, I just dodged a huge bullet here. Like,
right.
And then watching the movie, like, it, like, right out of the gate, it disintegrates a dude.
Oh yeah, big time. Guy in the cab.
I mean, you weren't really familiar with the magazine from back in the day. Then you really probably didn't.
I actually had a roommate in college who had all of the heavy metal posters, everything. And I remember thumbing through them, but I didn't actually put that together for some reason.
You know
what I mean?
Like, interesting.
Yeah.
Like, all of my comic collecting was around Marvel and around a guy named Michael J. Linsner. Linsner is a very X-rated comic artist. And so, like, I for some reason, I didn't, I don't know, I just never picked up.
Yeah, put it together. Yeah, sure.
That the heavy metal was also hard R-rated.
Probably because, like most of us, because if you grew up during the 80s, 70s, 80s, R-rated R sometimes gets confusing, because there was a time where, you know, during the 70s, it was like, yeah, we're showing nudity. And then in the 80s, we got very conservative. And so as we grew up, we probably a lot of times said, oh, it's just 80s boobs. That's like half a boob, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
But you forget, this movie was still sitting. It may have been in the early 80s, but this thing was sitting hard in the 70s. It was Canadian 80s, right? It was
early on.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Canadian 80s is a good way of putting it. Because you know, and this was a fully Canadian production. Somebody mentioned Ivan Reitman in their opening. I think it was Dunaway. This is his overall production, and we're talking three or four years before Ghostbusters. So this is like early Stripes, which we watched
here on the
And half this cast are all in Stripes,
Every character in the movie is voiced by John Candy. Could they not?
I love it. He's even in the background stuff. I don't realize that much John Candy. But I was listening this time, and there's like scenes of groups of people talking, and you can hear John Candy in the background.
He's just pretty recognizable.
Just a very recognizable voice.
Yeah. So Ivan Reitman as well, or not Ivan? Yeah. I'm sorry.
Harold Ramis.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you can tell Ramis, and you can also tell, or you can barely kind of tell when Eugene Levy would say stuff. Could kind of hear it, but he was pretty.
He wasn't full Eugene Levy in this. He wasn't. Yeah.
He wasn't. Mr. Shit. Exactly.
Yeah.
John Vernon, though, definitely recognizable. The dean who's dean from Animal House, prosecutor.
I had to look that up later or see that later. At the time, it didn't even occur to me that was him. So that was a revelation that freaking Dean Wormer's in there.
Dean Wormer. Yeah,
that's right.
That's the guy.
You have storage on your brain that keeps that forever. What a useless piece of information.
You mentioned, by the way, fully Canadian production. With one exception, not a single band that's featured on the album is Canadian.
That is crazy.
That's weird. I didn't even think of that until you just said that. That's true.
Yeah.
Over the last
13, 14 years, I've tried to investigate Canadian music, like going back in time. Like, what was it that crossed over into my world?
Rush.
And then what didn't, right? Yeah. Like, what's all the stuff that was like winning Juno Awards in any given year in my childhood? And like, it just never made it onto the radio in the United States where I was.
Yeah.
And I'm just fascinated by how there's some really good music that never got heard outside of Canada. And there's also some really terrible music that never got heard outside of Canada, but was like, you know, award worthy.
Yeah.
I have a playlist that I've been slowly curating on Spotify of Canadian songs that have won Juno Awards. And it's just like Juno Awards.
Juno Awards. Yeah.
I think
it's their Grammy. Yep.
And it's just like it makes perfect sense to me. that there's no Canadian bands or even singers or guitar players on this movie.
How do you not have Rush in here, though? This is Rush. This is prime time Rush hour.
This would have been perfect for Rush. Yeah, I mean, the closest you get really to heavy metal, you get Black Sabbath, Mob Rules, when the green lava dudes are taking over that city.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
It's hard to to me, it was kind of hard to describe what they did to the music in this film. It feels, I don't know how they mixed it in to take off all the hard edge of heavy metal, but it kind of works. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about. It's like it's all like muted, but not really muted.
Not sanitized, but just like you're talking just the music, right?
Just the music.
Because this is probably still one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. I can put this thing on and be fine. I'm fine with the fact that there's not more actual heavy metal on here. Because I love Devo. Journey song a little bit. Although now it only is going to conjure up memories of a guy flicking a nipple like it's a light switch.
I just can't think of Devo as heavy metal.
No.
So. I was I've just been looking at who were the Canadian hard rock bands other than Rush. Yeah. I'm going to say hard rock because I think that's a way better descriptor. That were known in 1981, and the list goes down really fast. It's like Triumph, Bachman Turner Overdrive. Those are Canadian. Okay. The Guess Who, I guess, could have
classic rugged hard rock.
I think Loverboy was a little side.
By the time I got to know Loverboy, they were more poppy.
A little new.
Yeah.
But then it got me thinking about Rush. So the story I've always heard about Rush is that they had an audience, and then at some point they added a keyboard sound to one of their albums and everybody turned their backs on them and hated them.
Oh, really?
Is it maybe that happened right before this movie? What I mean? Like maybe the people Rush making this movie were part of the listeners who were like, no, I'm mad at Rush right now because Moving Pictures or whatever. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, there was a couple of albums that were quite controversial. They changed up their sound.
Yeah, well, because everybody back then was doing that. They were like, well, the 80s is here. Yeah. What are we doing? Why don't we get all synthy? Van Halen getting away with it. Why can't we? There was a lot of that going on, I think. And, for good or for ill, and by ill, I mean anything to do with Starship, and by good, I mean, other bands. There was an evolution happening back then to music. And I think some jumped on and then some kept their sound. And overall, I think Rush came through okay. I think they're all right.
Rush is a legend.
Yeah.
For me, the standout was the very first song in the movie.
Is that Radar Rider? Is that the first?
Radar.
And it's like, I guess because I hadn't heard it, I didn't know this song. And it just really got me. There's a guy driving a top down Corvette out of space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
Had I forgotten that it was
MTV.
Photos, rotoscope, or not even rotoscope, photos just
pasted. No, that was and drawn top of them. It
was
weird.
Yeah, there was a ton of rotoscope in some of the segments.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah, it was also. They didn't really try to make the segments all look the same. I liked that.
Yeah,
I did too.
They hired different animation studios and a lot of
different
these guys
directors
on
each of them. Yeah.
So it's a bit like, I think of the modern equivalent of this is obviously something like Love Robot, Death Robots, Love, whatever it is.
Which is a direct sequel.
Yeah.
It's a direct connective tissue.
Is it really?
I didn't think there was any real connection.
No, that was supposed to be, it was the reboot they were planning always for Heavy Metal.
That's right.
The third heavy metal movie was in production hell forever, and they finally made it into that Netflix show.
I didn't know that. That's right. That's cool. That's actually kind of like that even better, because it feels like the natural evolution of this stuff, and they don't have to, you don't have to have the single freaking green ball run through the way, they were kind of creating a, Twilight Zone movie.
All right, I need a yes or no vote. Did you like the green ball as a connective tissue or not?
I loved it.
I thought it was all right.
I hated it back in the day, but I loved it.
It's fine. I'm probably right where, sounds like he's where I am.
it was shoehorned into a couple of them. You could have had Tarna fight the the dudes without, you know, there being a green ball that made the lava turn
Don't
evil.
Don't get me started on the Tarna segment. Oh God, long running.
But it's a MacGuffin in the. I mean, it's a MacGuffin for a lot of it, right? Like it's right. You know, it's the thing that kills the bad guy in Harry Canyon, but that's after the betrayal and after the, you know, the surprise of what's her face being, you know, taking the money and running.
Right. Oh, she didn't run.
Well, she didn't. Yeah, she didn't have a chance to run. Yeah,
that's a good point. So speaking of rotoscoping, your most use of that was the final segment with.
So that was interesting. I kept thinking, I was wondering how they did that, and I did a little reading. They did a lot of models, and then rotoscoped that, because I kept thinking, oh, they just flew a helicopter out some canyons, and they you know, I'm like, why would they spend all that money? They can just make a model and then rotoscope that. So that
did
makes
you
sense.
See? Yeah, the one of the great things on the Blu-ray is this bonus feature about the making of Heavy Metal, and it's a lot of interviews with Ivan Reitman and some of the other people involved. Sadly, none of the voice actors, but they show the rotoscoping of the model that they hired to slowly put clothes on.
I watched it.
Which was fascinating. It really was.
Let me tell you, they rotoscoped the hell out of them boobies because
they did. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she was not.
She's built like a regular human woman, a very attractive human woman, and they said, "Nope, those aren't big enough. I want
stop drawing out of the lines.
Big size of John Candy's head.
Yeah, big boobs.
I love the fact that the nipples were occasionally like that's not in the right direction for nipples. You got one way up here and one way down here.
It was obviously extremely cold in the animator's studio for all of these.
Well, and keep in mind, like, we're talking about, you know, an era where everything's still very hand-drawn, no computer assistance, really.
Yeah.
They had some green screen stuff they played around with that one planet with the king and the blue guy who's 18 but is now.
Yeah, Din. And that's also a character in the in the Heavy Metal. So there's a few characters that
I remember that
hard, hardcore in the
that one in the final segment. I don't remember the cab driver thing. I actually kind of maybe think that one
Harry
is
Canyon.
One I wouldn't mind more of.
Canyon's great because it reminds me of what was it, Fritz the Cat, or to me it seemed more like a full story. Definitely reminded me of like The Fifth Element, which makes sense because of the source material is from.
Right.
So yeah, I really dug that one. That was probably one of my favorite scenes.
And that was written by, I guess the story was by Daniel Goldberg and Len Blum, but the artwork was by Mobius in that one.
Right.
And
if you've ever seen Mobius' stuff, you're like, oh yeah, that's it is.
Man, in San Francisco there was an entertainment building with movie theaters and bars and restaurants, and then it had a video game arcade that was designed by Mobius. God, what was this place called? I want to say Peloton, but now I'm getting that confused. But it was but it was an actual like sit down video game arcade. Like the games were all, I think maybe Japanese imports that you played sitting down.
Right.
And then they had a whole bunch of his artwork on the walls, pipes everywhere.
That'd be awesome.
I bought a messenger bag that had the woman from Heavy Metal riding her Wind Rider thing.
Oh, that's awesome. Her Wind Rider. You mean her giant crying turkey bird.
Exactly.
Piece of shit bird.
Her whooping turkey bird.
It's so much cooler in that cover art. It's amazing in the cover art. In the movie. It's terrible.
It's horrible. Yeah. It's like, how does that thing even fly?
In the movie itself. I'm right. I'm with you guys. In the cover art stuff, it looks like a giant badass moth or something.
Yeah.
But in the movie, it looks like joust turkey birds or something. Yeah. Featherless turkey birds. And it's weird. And please tell me, Scott, that you captured like the 20 minutes of it going.
I got some.
I think we're gonna agree. It sounds like we're gonna agree that the movie, you know, as a series of segments, our appreciation for it goes down from beginning to end. Like you start out liking it. Harry Canyon's great. Den is interesting, and then with each coming segment, it's just like
I find Den to be the worst. Den was pretty bad. The most to me. Dan would have spoke to most of me as a kid because that's where it's talking from. But yeah, well, now it's like, oh, God.
If you can't access your 17-year-old boy brain to watch this
14-year-old.
Movie, you're gonna hate the movie entirely. Yeah. Like as a 17-year-old boy watching this last night, I'm like, okay, yeah, as it's starting, I'm kind of titillated. Den is exciting. Like Harry Canyon is good. You know, like that's I agree with Scott that I wanted
watch
more
a
of
series
that.
Of Harry Canyon. That's just good stuff.
Yeah, but especially Den, I want to know more about that alien that the police were bringing in. That's like, I don't have my papers. Where's my papers?
Yeah,
I don't have papers.
But then Captain Stern comes along and you're like, no, take me back to the thing where the dude is fighting people.
Right. I liked Stern more than Den, I think.
Interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Stern was way better because if nothing else, all of that animation and art, whoever was leading that one up, and I got to go back and look again. Whoever was leading that department was doing a lot of stuff.
You
the
care
animation.
About how this movie looks. Okay, all right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it matters.
Bernie Wrightson, by the way.
I never once thought, this segment is better or worse because of how it looks. Like, that never occurred to me.
Creator of Swamp Thing, Bernie Wrightson,
there you
was
go.
Responsible That's, for Captain
that,
Stern.
Oh,
yeah. Visually,
that.
I knew there was something there that felt very familiar. It was very much what we saw with John Kay in Ren and Stimpy and those kind of stuff. It was a bridge between old animation.
Very proto John Kay. That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
It also, I found that one just really disconcerting because I never quite understood.
That's what I loved about it. I love the crazy hand over fist. He was the part that made it interesting. The cocky captain, that didn't do anything for me, but the hand over fist losing his effing mind and just becoming this force. Yeah. I found that fascinating.
Right, but it's almost as if at the very end when Stern is pinned behind the wall he's like, okay, here's your money. Like, they couldn't have planned that the whole time because it was all based on the green ball
his power. His power was to control people through money, and Hanover Fist, even though he was possessed with this great evil and power, was still Hanover Fist on the inside, which is just, you know,
Hanover Fist, voiced by Roger Bumpass, who is Squidward on SpongeBob.
Yes.
Oh, that's Squidward? No way.
Yeah, that was Squidward.
Nice catch. Yeah. I did not notice that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you might be right, Randy. I think I was probably enamored with the voice acting, the connective tissue between John Kay, and I was seeing a lot of more things that appealed to me as a lover of animation, whereas I don't know, Den, it just, like I said, hearing John Candy do a teenager's voice, and he probably wasn't that far from being a teenager at this point, but it just
he's in his 20s,
weird,
but,
and uncomfortable.
As someone who couldn't draw a stick figure and get the right number of limbs on it, I often find myself going back and forth between really noticing like the differences, right? Like the animation styles as they change from one segment to the next, and going for an hour and not noticing at all what things look like. Like, it's like, I really, like, I just generally don't have a care. Like, when I play video games, I don't care what characters look like. I don't care about changing how they look like. Mm-hmm. I know people who sit at the character creation screens of video games for hours, and I will hit the random button and get on with my life. And, and so like, so like a movie like Heavy Metal, I think it can absolutely fly above its maximum ceiling for people like you, who really care. Like, oh, look at how they've drawn faces and eyes and hair or whatever in any given segment. And I almost wonder if that's to its detriment. Like, a movie like this can capture your attention while still being a really bad movie.
This movie owes everything to Walt Disney in a lot of ways. And it starts at Fantasia. The first Fantasia.
Disney's anthology.
Sure,
Disney's anthology. Right, where they take classical music and they, you know, weave these stories through it. And that's what's going on here. And a lot of these guys had worked in and out of Disney animation studios and different places. So, I mean, everything about this is got, I found it fascinating that Walt Disney, when he first did Fantasia, wanted to showcase animators every year in a running series where he would do like a Fantasia every year with music and different things. And it never got to that. Not until here. This is what it would have evolved to, Disney. This is what would have happened. How many years after Fantasia? What, almost 50 years after Fantasia?
Was it really that long?
Oh, well, wow. Is that right?
Yeah.
Fantasia was like the one of the first Disney. Yeah. 1940. Right. You're right. Yeah. 40 years after Fantasia.
Yeah. 40 years. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah.
That's cool.
We wouldn't see another Fantasia until the IMAX Fantasia 2, which was fantastic.
Right. And get this, both Heavy Metal and Fantasia had sequels in 2000.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, weird.
I noticed.
Weird.
A lot of things got
been on my plate for a real long time.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't know any of that. I guess I'm kind of on the Dunaway side of things where I see this stuff for, I'm more interested in tone and like look and world building and animation and stuff. And if I'm honest, the Den thing, it's a terrible name for a character, by the way, Den.
Sure. Yeah, it's an acronym for his human form on Earth.
I'm going to call it an acronym for bullshit. Is what it is. For,
oh, David Ellis Norman. You're right. Yeah. Okay.
It's just a bunch of bullshit. But anyway, the point is, I'll watch almost anything like this for those reasons, even if they're poorly made. And I think there's a lot of this that's not amazing. I mean, there's moments I think of really cool world building storytelling. But it's mostly a sandwich, and the bread was the best part for me, the first story and the last story.
Right. Uh-huh.
But that's not unlike, all the years of liquid television we used to watch. And,
something that we didn't used to watch, because I have no idea what is liquid television.
What?
Oh, you didn't watch liquid television. It was also a time. There's always periods of time where we showcased the newest animation coming up, and that's what Liquid Television was. It was MTV's way of presenting all of these indie animations, and it was fantastic.
Really avant-garde indie shorts, animated shorts. Created
We watched Iron Flux here on the movie that was.
That's right. It was part of that.
That's where Beavis and Butthead got its start, and stuff like that.
I do vaguely remember it now that you said MTV. I remember I had a friend who lived a couple blocks over, and his parents were wealthy and they had cable. And I remember going over and occasionally watching MTV at his house, but like it was very subversive. We had to sneak over there after school when his parents.
It was your heavy metal magazine at the time, right?
Mm-hmm. I guess this was early 90s, right?
Mm. Right. Right.
Yeah. Like really early 90s, like 1990. Mm. I don't remember Liquid Television like standing out somehow, but you're absolutely right. Beavis and Butthead was a massive cultural touch point in my life.
Yeah. They got started there. Then they got like, Ian Flux is another one obviously that happened there. That was, I remember at the time thinking that I'd never seen
Max had
cool.
a huge moment. Most people probably have forgotten about the Max, but
I love the Max.
The Max was a comic.
Oh, yeah.
And it was an amazing animated short on Liquid TV. Is
one of the, not creators of the Hulk, but one of the famous Marvel Hulk artists left and went to Image and came up with the Max, and it always kind of had Hulk trappings, but man, I love that stuff. So yeah, you had this really amazing kind of like bursting out of animated content that was more adult flavored, less, we were obviously less aimed at kids, and you could go into the whole history of animation and why the Simpsons had a role in that and everybody else and their dog. But seeing this again was this reminder of like, oh yeah, we got a little primordial ooze here. This is kind of where all that stuff started to
meld. And we can all think the French. Thanks, Frenchies.
I mean, but also, is this not where some things end? Like, is this not sort of like the punctuation on a certain movement?
I think it is. It is the punctuation of the hardcore fantasy scene from the 70s. We got a little bit more campy after this.
Like surely the filmmakers of Heavy Metal wanted it to be really successful and popular and spawn things, but it didn't, right? It really did not lead to anything anytime soon.
A midnight art house theater cult film for a while, like the Rocky Horror Picture Show thing for a little bit.
It was bumping up against something that we're about to see in America called the Satanic Panic during the early 80s. We got very conservative. This was coming in at a time when our country was shutting down to all of this. And so, yeah, it didn't stand much of a chance.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That was around the time that, I mean, it was super forbidden fruit in our house, but mostly it was all the boobs. That was all it was. And
it was all boobs.
My parents couldn't get their heads around the idea that a cartoon would be full of boobs. They just didn't.
This movie reminded me of a piece of forbidden fruit that was in my house when I was this age, when I was a little kid. Mm. And that was my brother had a vinyl record and and most importantly, the sleeve.
Yes.
That was called The Bertha Butt Boogie.
Oh, Bertha Butt Boogie. Yeah.
By the Jimmy Castor Bunch.
Okay. God,
I knew every word on that.
It was
Jimmy Castor Bunch.
Oh, wow.
Let us tell you how we used to look at pseudo porn when we were growing up. It was all album. And so the avatar, JCPenney catalogs. Go ahead.
The avatar of Jimmy Castor, whoever that was a 70s blaxploitation superhero. And Bertha Butt was a like native jungle woman.
Nice. Oh,
and they were both on the album cover, and she had one bare breast on the album cover. Right? And it looked exactly like the breasts you see in heavy metal. And, you know, I must have looked at that thing every day for 1,000 days straight. Yeah. And like
with one hand.
As far as forbidden fruit goes, a vinyl record cover was perfect because you could slip it between the pieces of your bed. What are those called?
Your blankets.
Mattress in the box.
Mattress box.
Oh, okay.
Your pieces.
Mom would never look underneath a teenager's mattress.
She never did.
No.
Yeah.
That's because she chose it, not because she was stupid.
Yeah, because she chose not to. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not looking there because there might just be something.
If you've never heard of this, I need to spell it out. Bertha Butt is spelled B-U-T-T.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Butts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's like Seymour Butts or...
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
So that's where our sexual energy was at this time frame for us kids, right? That's why this was important to us. I think it still probably would. I wonder how someone viewing it today would see it. It's, you know, we got hot and cold running porn anytime you want it.
I saw the movie yesterday as quaint, you know, it never struck me as even avant-garde. Because of the last 30
years. We've been so desensitized. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The most shocking part would be the fur bikinis that these women are wearing. Are they wearing a bikini or is that...
Right.
What is that?
Yeah.
I was happy to see that on Tarna the carpet did match the drapes.
I thought the same thing. I wrote it down. I said, yeah,
we got the gray carpet matches the gray drapes.
Yeah.
They apparently, there's a bunch of trivia about how the thing almost got an X rating and they had to like trim some stuff and they went back, the animators went back into scenes where the women were running around completely naked in all the scenes. And they went back and retro added like little thongs and little bikinis and stuff.
Hyper violent.
Yeah.
Hyper sexualized, even though there's only a few moments of real sex on scene. But, you know, everything is meant to be hyper sexualized.
Yeah. That's the era. So, you know, before anybody at home goes, I can't believe you guys are condoning that. No, we're not. It's a piece of history. Right. I don't think this exists in this way today. If they were going to do a new version of this, I think you'd see a different kind of empowerment, perhaps a different kind of approach to this sort of thing.
And it's been 40 years. Like we can kind of turn off our brain, right, from the last 40 years of human progress, societal growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you kind of have to. And I'll bet you 20 years from now, the earlier Quentin Tarantino movies look kind of the same way to people,
right?
You know,
right.
I'll bet you like the. the writer director sitting in as a cast member also using the N-word, like people are gonna look at that and go, unacceptable, right?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Like there are definitely things in heavy metal that you could look at in 2022 and just say, unacceptable.
Yeah,
no, not going to work today.
Totally. Which is a little bit of a bummer because I realize they were being true to the magazine. That's what this is. Is that a thing still? Can you get heavy metal like a subscription?
Is the magazine still out?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think there's like limited run heavy metals, and I've seen some out there, but I forget now. But you can also still get Mad Magazine, even though it doesn't really exist, really.
Well, no, Mad Magazine still exists in print, and it's all ad supported now. But I think
Scott, there are new ish heavy metal. Like I'm looking at 2020 and 2021.
And the problem is it has almost zero cultural impact, as opposed to the movie from 81, which had a huge cultural impact because of where we had been, what we were exploring as specifically Americans. I can't speak for the rest of the world, but we're definitely still exploring, you know, where were we going? Because during the 70s, we said free love, and that didn't end so well. And so we were like, okay, well, now what? Do we contract or do we continue?
Hey, Randy or Brian, you're cracking up bad. I don't know why. I think everyone else.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think it's just you. Okay.
I'm still cracking up.
Yeah, you're cracking up real bad.
I was making a really good point.
You're making a really good robot sound. You're making amazing robot.
You sound like that robot having sex with the redhead.
It's like, I'm not circumcised or whatever joke. Yeah. I don't know what that was. It just got weird as soon as you started talking.
Is it back now? Is it okay?
It's still all crunchy. It's like you're getting
cool. What was we saying?
You were saying, I don't remember. You were saying something
magazine.
About things. Oh, yeah. We found basically you can still get recent-ish issues of it, and they have a whole site with a bunch of extra stuff, and it's still a thing.
Are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording. We're still here.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going. We're going, baby.
It is still a thing. It looks like all they ever do is one shots, but that's fine. Like
I'm
fine with that.
It looks really badass. Like, The one I linked to you guys is the issue of Heavy Metal from 2 weeks ago, which probably means it came out 2 months ago because you know how those things work. Mm-hmm. And I want it. I want to thumb through it. Like this, it looks amazing.
Yeah, they're great. The art was insane. Like again, it was, you know, you always knew you were going to get some adult thing and it was going to be super violent and probably have sex in it. But you were also going to get some trippy sci-fi that you didn't get in mainstream media at all. And I love that.
And actually, like, now that you say trippy sci-fi, it kind of triggered my thoughts about what I didn't like about the movie.
Tell us.
The movie just barrels ahead with whatever. It's like,
right. And they're writing it as they're going along kind of thing.
Yeah.
And at times it's like the movie becomes self-aware and it tries to explain itself by hand waving at you. And it's like the biggest trope ever. Like and it happens over and over and over. This movie, a guy dives into a pool to save a drowning woman, and then starts swimming along. And you're like, "Wow, he's underwater a long time." And the movie realizes, "Wow, he's underwater a long time." So the movie has him think out loud. He thinks out loud, "Ooh, I shouldn't be able to do this. I wonder why I'm able to do this." And you're like, "Yeah, it's hand waving. You're hand waving."
I couldn't pay attention to that because I was laughing too hard about the animation of her. Like, he jumped in and he, like, wraps her legs, which are tied at the ankle around his neck, and he's just wearing, like, a cape, an underwater cape. Yep.
So, you know, the pressure of the water going right up her nose as he's
pushing
along.
Yeah. I'm like, you're gonna come up and, she's going to be – Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah. I was thinking, you're going to come up and she's going to be dead. That lady is dead.
Nope. Right.
Like, but the movie would be better off if it just – proposed to let you decide for yourself for you to figure out, oh, he's got superpowers. Oh, we're on an alien planet where people can, swim underwater for 2 minutes. Like that sort of thing, you know?
Sure. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, the truth of the matter is there are now a million things better than this. And so so really its place in the world is as proto material for the future of avant-garde animation. Like looking back on it, I am also like, you know, you didn't try very hard here, or you didn't, you know, the art in this particular segment's kind of bad, or the storytelling is terrible, or whatever. I'm sure they struggled against studios to get shit done, and like, this seemed too weird.
There was no studios.
Well, it was something. It ended up in theaters. It had to be distributed.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to come back and look who the studios were. I think that, I think I knew exactly what I was into is within the first couple of minutes when we have the radar rider, when he comes out, pops out with his Corvette out of the back by the bottom of the Columbia So, you know,
again, I said that was one of my favorite things in the movie. But imagine if that guy in that car had thought out loud, how can I do this? How is this physically possible?
Well, we got to remember, like, the space shuttle was the first time it was up. Yeah. That was like 81 was the same year that Columbia went up for the first time, right? That was so.
Was it?
It was very. Yeah. So it was very. It's like, ooh, look at this brand new stuff. And we're going to – this is how stuff works. Yeah, you can drop a Corvette down to a planet and not die.
That's so weird.
Drive
that
away.
Opening thing is the weirdest because it doesn't ever explain it. You know, freaking Newman-looking-ass guy with under the helmet going, oh, I got something for you.
I feel like you're arguing with me here. I'm saying you're better off without an overt explanation.
Yeah, I agree.
That it's more cool and interesting when you make up the explanation for yourself.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. Yes. This is why
it's hard for me to peel away what I already knew, even going into this, because during the 70s, I read horror comics, and these were partially part of that, especially in the mansion where he's harassing and bringing memories to the girl. I'm like, oh, this is such horror comics from way back. And so everything to me just felt, when I watched it, it just felt like, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, the original through line, the original setup that was going to keep all the stories together was going to be a carousel. Like, basically, Grimaldi didn't die, and he was presenting a carousel to his daughter, and each of the rides on the carousel was a different story. There was a B-17 bomber that you could ride on. There was a wind rider, a howling turkey bird. There was a... a little spaceship or whatever.
Yeah.
See, that would have. I don't know.
that would have been a lot better connective tissue. Because I'm with you guys. It does feel disconnected because the Lochnar kind of like goes, and then here's another story. That's it. That's how they pull it together. You know, just with narration over top of some animation they already had.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of loosely tied in.
It's hard for me to put my finger on this. But like some of this looks like the shitty He-Man stuff that was about to happen.
Yeah.
The filmation.
As it should, because one of the animation studios that worked on some of this stuff actually worked on the She-Ra comic books, which influenced the series. And so, I mean, all these artists that are working right now were going to be huge. We're already huge, really.
Yeah.
Commercials and heading into the 80s.
Some of it's just so much better than, like, I thought the airplane or the bomber stuff looked the best, maybe.
Yeah. And that one of all the stories has kind of what I think is like the most concise or solid plan, right? Okay. This guy's on this bomber. Oh no, everybody's dying, but they're kind of coming back as zombies. Oh, I finally escaped. I got out, parachute landed, and crap. Now I'm in the middle of a whole field of these things with zombies. It's like, one person said, no, I think I may actually have an ending for my story.
Yeah, yeah. And oddly enough, the B-17 story, which I felt kind of abrupt because it kind of came out of the Captain Stern. I found out that there was a missing one in between called Neverwhere Land. Mm-hmm. That was a really a big nod to the Fantasia type styling of primordial all the way to modern war and into the B-17 story. And
yeah, you watch
that it gets fully animated.
The evolution of a planet to go from cavemen beating the crap out of each other all the way up to Hitler
and boobs.
Then he goes into and boobs. Is there boobs in that one?
There's an animatic and it shows Jack the Ripper and he's like all raping her in the streets and stuff, boobs all a flying everywhere. So okay. They didn't miss anything there.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not sad I missed that one.
Yeah, they didn't miss a beat.
No. Do they do this today if they remake it? No. Do they make something cool? Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, because now is because this was about exploring the fantasy side of sexuality, over-sexualization, what is deep down inside humankind. And now we do robots because that's, that's where we're at. That's where we're fantasizing, I guess, sexually.
Are we? Oh, they were.
As a culture. Because
okay, I gotcha.
We're exploring what sexuality means in our modern times. I think if you go a couple more years down the line, you may be looking at a couple other things that are especially hot topics now in America and across the world. So,
yeah,
it's a creative outlet for artists, and I think it's important. Really,
there's the question. I can't make up my mind. I mean, obviously, how important can it be if nothing has ever pushed me to watch it in 40 years? But
right.
At the same time, like I always look at stuff like this. I'm like, I want to believe. I want to become a believer in whatever. Because a lot of people put a lot of effort into making this thing. You know, it's a work of art, right? But is it important?
I don't think it is important to necessarily – You know, but those who were looking for artistic camaraderie, maybe, I mean, I don't think, no, not everybody has seen heavy metal and not everybody is influenced by it, but those who need to feel like they are on the outside or unusual or weird, if they can find this, they may find a way to, you know, unlock their own creativity and answer some questions that you probably can't talk about in polite company. Let's say that something is nagging you. Go ahead.
But if you can't talk about it in polite company, isn't it just a lot of people making their own porn?
It kind of, is, but it kind of, it's according. I mean, you can throw it all away and go, humans don't have sexuality.
I don't want that to sound like a huge put down, right? Because like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie is a certain kind of people making their own porn, right? And like you can, you know, like that's too dismissive.
Yeah, I just like true lies.
I look at something like this and it just didn't like, I tried really, really hard to go, okay, it's 1981. I'm going to let this really capture my imagination. It didn't.
It's, you know? Yeah. And it might not have spoken to you. Like I said, in the things that I was reading and I was doing and I was exploring, this was just another link in the chain of, creativity that I was exploring, but it is definitely not mainstream. And so you may have been totally withdrawn from all of this. And it would be very abrupt if you open the book of what modern art is saying and you open it to this page, you'd probably be like, ah, what happened? I'm going to need some context. I'm going to need to roll back a little bit.
Do you like that fake Devo band in there, Brian Ibbett?
I kind of like that. Yeah.
That was pretty great. Those guys looked real stupid.
They were all wearing glasses or something.
One guy had a blindfold on, and then they had the Bougie Boy, the classic Devo Bougie Boy who you saw in some of their early videos as one of the players in the band.
So they had the. They had the Cantina band in there. It was
kind of was. Yeah.
He was,
yeah,
he was playing was. That one weird keyboard that you could warp or something. That was kind of cool.
That was pretty neat.
Like a bendy guitar.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
As I told you last week, I was really looking forward to the use of the Sammy Hagar song Heavy Metal in this movie. It was like one of my favorite things. Like I had all kinds of, I had a big box of cassettes in the late 80s and like I had made, you know, I had made my own mixtapes. And so like the idea of a heavy metal mixtape, you know what I mean? Like it was going to definitely have the Sammy Hagar song Heavy Metal on it.
Yeah.
And so not knowing really what this movie was about, I had some expectations, and then it turns out, no, it's just a feature music video in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing is space stuff. But the Sammy Hagar song Heavy Metal is about how you amplify guitars and voices and drums to make a really, really loud thing that hurts people almost.
Right.
And like they didn't go together. The song and what I was seeing in the movie didn't fit. Right. You know?
Well, wasn't it a different he didn't even do that song, right? Or am I mixing it up? I thought the Heavy Metal song was
There are two. There's Heavy Metal Taking a Ride, which is the Don Felder, I believe.
One. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Heavy and that's the metal. Slow one. Take a ride on heavy metal.
That's but the one I like.
But the Hagar one is the It's Your One Way Ticket to Midnight. Call it heavy metal.
That's right.
Listen, I love it when Ibbett performs for us.
I played that old soundtrack so much I could probably even tell you track order on the original album.
Yeah. Now, do you have this on vinyl?
I don't. No, my uncle did. Yeah. And it was cool because it was a double disc set, and they did in the old days, instead of the first disc having side A and side B, they knew that you had one of those turntables that had the little spindle with the the spindle with a little peg on it, and they would drop the second album when the
reached the end of the first one.
So it's like
staggered.
Side A and side B are on two separate albums.
That makes sense.
And then you flip them over at the same time, and side C and side D were on the flip side. So it was like A and D and B and C, I think, were on that.
Nothing more. If you've never experienced a record drop on a change, it is something that you cannot compare to anything else in this world. It's like, oh, the music stopped. Okay, now I'm watching.
It was crazy. Like that was our autoplay. Like
that was the CD disc hit. That's the CD logo on the screensavers waiting for that the anxiety of when's it going to drop.
Corner.
Right. When's it going to drop?
I grew up in a household with three record players, and one of them was so freaking fancy, and I didn't know.
It did not ever
occur to me. At Christmas, my mom would get out some Christmas records from the 70s and play them, but like generally speaking, the records that were being played in my brother's room or in my parents' bedroom, I just didn't really care. I didn't notice or anything. But in the living room,
she had the hi-fi in there.
That thing was it was built into a table.
Yeah, so console,
it was like it was a console record player that came out on these shock absorbers, and it had a mechanism that could flip a record automatically when it got to the end.
And everything was crushed red velvet on the inside. Is that what you had?
It was fascinating to me. Oh, it actually had
later used as a TV stand.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, that's what you did.
That's what you did.
I can't wait to get my hands on that thing. Like I'm able to look back, I'm like, man, that is the coolest freaking thing. It had this thing up the middle of the spindle that would raise the record.
Yeah.
And then this, and you had this funny
F looked like an F, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this arm, this other arm, not the needle arm, but this other arm would come under the record and lift it and flip it.
Taking you out of here, flip time.
Like a jukebox, like you see those in jukeboxes, right? Where it slips under the record and then it like flips it.
Yeah. And it's just like, I never appreciated that. I promise you, never once did I ever look at that and go, that's really cool. And like, I thought it was just old and dumb, you know, records. I have cassettes now. Cassettes are so much better, and they're not.
No, they're not. They're so much not. We all thought they were, but they weren't.
Yeah.
I mean, they have their place, and I kind of have super fond feelings.
They were just super portable.
Yeah, they were.
I'm telling you, man, I don't know if I've preached it here, or if I've preached it elsewhere, and I'm sure the young people or people or anybody younger than me or people not into records are like, shut up, Brian. But I'm telling you, there's something engaging about playing a vinyl record that you just don't get from Spotify. I can turn on an album on Spotify and I can almost totally ignore the album at some point. Whereas on a vinyl, I've got to pay attention, and it makes me engage with the music. Because I'm like, oh, it's about, I got to flip it. So it's just this engagement level that you just don't get when you're just binging stuff.
Why is there such a fondness now for LPs, but still not one for Laserdiscs, where halfway through the movie you have to flip the Laserdisc over, right?
Yeah. Like,
I'm totally willing to accept, I get to listen to half of my album, then I go over and I flip it and I listen to the other half. I'm fine with that.
Well,
but boy, I'm going to have to watch a movie on Laserdisc. It's like, no effing way.
Yeah. That's a level of engagement you're not interested in if you haven't played a Laserdisc lately. This is only 480i at home, and that looks like ass.
Oh yeah,
it does. Even if you have a old CRT which you can play it on and it looks at least the way it was intended to look, it's still a hassle. It's not like listening to music. It's a hassle.
Yeah, that's pretty funny though, because
it's a hassle.
I think music has an active component where you're like, all right, I'm gonna get up and I'm gonna flip that over. And while I'm doing it, I'm looking at the jacket and I'm reading the lyrics. Yeah,
I'm looking at the butts on my album
or whatever.
Yeah, this cool, Eddie the Beast thing or whatever, you know. But I think there's whereas with movies, you just don't want to get off the couch.
Yeah.
You're there.
Let me tell you something else, too. A lyric sheet in an album is fine to read. One in a cassette tape, that's a pain in the ass.
Big old pain to read.
You have to unfold it, and that thing never folds back up the way you want it.
Yeah, never.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's my old man moment. Enjoy it. Heavy metal. You need to listen to it on vinyl if you're going to listen to it.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah. The album, I noticed the entire album's on Spotify, Apple Music, and all the music services. So if you really got to go that way, you can do that as well. There's a couple pieces of trivia here that are interesting. I don't know if you guys noticed it. I did, and then I went and looked it up, and sure enough, confirmed, when the aliens are stoned and flying through space. By the way, cocaine wouldn't make you stoned. It would make you hyper, but whatever.
Right.
Space cocaine, I guess. I don't know what that's.
Well, I mean, it was so much cocaine, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
In addition to never seeing a live naked woman, these guys, the animators also never had cocaine.
Yeah, they never used drugs before. But one of the damaged ships that they pass is the USS Enterprise. Literally says it on the thing.
I saw that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I noticed that.
Yeah.
Before, yeah.
4 years later, the Star Trek III would happen and the Enterprise would be destroyed. But that was
a cultural, phenomenal experience that I don't think anyone can appreciate. The first time we saw the Enterprise go down, it was like they killed Captain Kirk.
I mean, it was a big deal. Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, you thought killing
Spock. Since then, we've destroyed a bunch of Enterprises and just keep putting new numbers on.
Yeah, it's fine now. We have a standard for it. But back then, it was like sacrosanct. I couldn't believe they did it.
Oh,
it was bad enough you killed Spock, and you had to literally bring him back is how bad of an idea that was. And then you
have a whole planet.
Then you kill the ship, and then you spend the whole next movie flying a bird of prey? Horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, that's my favorite dad joke right now. Is I pull up my sleeve and show somebody my arm, and I go, check out my cool bird of prey tattoo. And there's nothing there.
Oh, there's nothing there. It's cloaked.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Get it. It's my favorite thing right now. I'm going to do it to everybody until they're sick of it. Anyway. all right. Eclipse now? What do you think? Eclipse? Yeah, okay.
Sure. Oh, I don't want to just sit here with my dork hanging out.
Yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, my dork hanging out. I forgot about that.
You know that exists in the Eclipse collection here. All right. Well, here we go then. Let's get into them. We got this one here from Harry Canyon.
My name's Harry Canyon. I drive a cab.
Richard Romanus.
Do we know him from anything?
It's not. You know what? He doesn't. Listening back, he doesn't sound as slow and noir as my memory of watching this was.
Yeah, that newspaper he's holding, by the way, was dated New York Times, dated July 3rd, 2031. So that's when this is supposed
2031. That's what I was thinking it was too.
Yeah.
So it's coming up
50 years in the future. Exactly 50 years in the future.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's coming up, baby. We'll see how it goes. All right, hand over your cash.
Okay, sucker. Hand over your cash.
That thing, this voice felt out of place a little bit. Not very cyberpunk, but
whatever. It was. That's okay. He got vaporized shortly thereafter, right?
So, yeah. Yep. Here's a good kiss my ass moment.
Kiss my ass, will you?
I'll do it for $20.
All these poor ladies in the IMDb, they're all listed as whores. That's just their credits.
Right. Whore.
Yeah, some lady in her 80s was a whore. Good lord. All right.
I played a whore
in the heavy metal movie. You may have seen it.
Is Rusty still in the Navy? That's what it reminds me of. here's the alien Brian Ibbett brought up earlier. Captured his deal.
I tell you, I'm an American citizen. I just lost my papers or something.
I don't know who that was.
I like that guy.
Is that John Candy?
Might have been. Could have been Eugene Levy.
I think it's John Candy holding his nose.
That entire little bit was so they could make the joke that he's a legal alien.
Yeah.
One hold. That's a lot of work. A lot of work for that one joke. You're right. Yeah. Here's John Candy's first vocal appearance that I'm aware of. If he's not the alien, I'm not sure he is, but he's definitely this guy.
Before you go any further, pal, I gotta tell you, it's cash up front. $1,000 a day for a full investigation. Another $1,000 of the assailant is caught. You understand?
Jeez,
police That's work. Cops man. Of the future, right there, Candy.
Yeah.
Right.
It's rough, man. That whole. You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and say it. The Fifth Element people may have gotten some ideas from this. Because that same story.
It's all tied in together.
Here's the girl. I'm going to take her. I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
But I'm going to. They're shooting
the artist
at me.
One of the artists grew up with one of the artists here, and he had a great influence on the film.
Didn't Morbius do? I thought Morbius did all the concept art for...
I think he did some of it.
Mobius, shit. Morbius the half vampire man did
you really
all
need to
thing.
Go watch that movie and just get that. You'll never want to talk about Morbius again after you see the movie.
Yeah,
you feel it point. Because there is connective tissue. There you go, Scott. We won't dig into too deep into it, but yes, there is connective tissue between.
I'm pretty sure Mobius did all that art. Yeah, it is. Yeah,
he did some of the art.
I think he just did the original story, the art for the original story it's based on. So it was influenced by that. But
and his childhood friend
or anything.
No, yeah, his childhood friend also worked on The Fifth Element.
I'm pretty sure he was literally paid by the Fifth Element producers to do shit. Yeah, look, yeah, I found it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Fifth Element. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, Fifth Element for sure.
I'm sorry, not heavy metal. Yeah, the aliens in Fifth Element were absolutely designed by. Right.
And that cop, he did that cop with the big giant circle on his chest and the all those weird designs. So good. Love that stuff. All right. I knew I wasn't crazy. Moving on to this clip.
Click. Time for this click.
I almost said a different CLI word.
Nice.
It'd be appropriate for this movie. Anyway, what does this actually mean, I wrote?
Nothing can beat good old American know-how. And I was given this broad, the Stars and Stripes, forever.
I don't get it.
It was the
well the
worst.
Stripes would be his penis and the stars would be
I don't know. His testicles. I don't know. It was a weird thing to say. I just could not.
And then the music that was playing there, that's really familiar.
Open arms by Journey.
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing can be good old American know-how.
Oh, it's at the end, isn't it?
Right. And it sounds like the music on a public service announcement on
The More You Know.
Yeah.
It does. Hey, that's got a Star and Stripes in it too.
Yeah, you're not wrong. All right, here's some more candy.
It all started when I found the green meteorite. I read in Faraday's Life of the Planets that smaller ones like this are supposed to burn up when they enter the atmosphere.
Hey, I'm 18. Hey, yeah, everybody.
Can you make yourself sound younger?
I love John Candy's youthful thing he does.
I'm torn on it. I'm at the same time pleased and annoyed by it. Like,
yeah, that's what makes you great.
But I love John Candy, so it's kind of hard. I can't reconcile. Here's some intense music for a very intense moment. Good stuff right there.
Oh yeah, we never even talked about the score. It's Elmer Bernstein, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is Elmer Bernstein.
It's very good. I think.
Yeah. Like we get so focused on the soundtrack, the score is actually pretty damn good.
Yeah,
too.
It was quite good. I like that a lot.
I want to touch on John Candy just a moment. He was 30 when he recorded his lines for this movie.
Okay, so 30. Older than I thought too. Jeez.
And dude died at 43.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Too young.
43.
Yeah, plus his last movie was Into the East, Wagons East, and it's a piece of shit.
Wagons movie. East.
The movie's bad.
I know people who are just getting out of college at 43.
Oh, yeah, no, it's too young. When we were kids, that seemed old, but that ain't old, man. That's stupid still, young, and he had a lot more to do. Pisses me off. All right, I got some audio from Ibbitt's mom.
I can't imagine what this is going to be.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So this
the
is
the worst movie for that. Get something.
Something
from your mom.
You said, you left prom early, and someone's like, "Wait, what are you doing?" And you yelled this back.
There was no way I was going to walk around this place with my dork hanging out.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Why was your dork
really
hanging
out? Cheap tux, no zipper.
Yeah.
Basically, I tried moving my cummerbund a little bit lower, but
too low.
Popped
took
out.
It back to Mr. B's famous tuxes and got my money back.
Yeah. Well.
For a reason.
I'll bet if they had known that in the subsequent decade of years, that word dork would become a totally PG word that everybody used openly in front of their parents, they might have used a more R-rated word there. It just sounds like to nowadays, it just sounds
it's totally wrong. Because when you say dork, I don't think of that. I think of a dork. Nerds. Yeah. Like a weird. Well, I think of a weirdo or like a funny guy or a nerd or whatever.
Right.
I think of penises.
I know. I know you do.
Please capture that.
Here's what these people. Oh, yeah. Someone capture. Oh, hold on. Mark it. Thank you for the reminder. I'll just do it myself later. All right. Let's play this one. This is what the little chanty dudes were saying. Here you go.
Ula-tech. Ula-tech. Ula-tech.
Ula-tech.
Yeah, it's 45 Ula-tech. John Layard. John Candy Layers is what you're hearing there.
Is that a bunch of him doing that?
No, I don't know. I know. Probably.
They probably did. But I love the Ula-tech sounds like a place I need to.
Cthulhu. It's Cthulhu backwards, by the way.
It is. It is Cthulhu backwards. That's right.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, learning something new.
And we're all saying it wrong, apparently.
Cthulhu.
Are you around? Let's see what this is.
Are you from around here?
Oh, that guy. Are you from around here?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. The augmented John Candy's voice. Here's the king.
He couldn't think of something to say to the naked girl.
Yeah.
He's like, what do I say?
Oh, right.
How am I supposed to be charming?
They're both naked, so, and she's like, oh, I'm from Earth. I have nothing to give you, but I'll give you me. It's like, shut up, dude. All right, here's the king. He cracked me up. He was just a weenie.
They tell me you are Den of Earth, the one who dared to steal the female sacrifice from the queen.
What a goob.
Okay.
I love Wolverine effeminate. It's awesome.
Wait, what?
Wolverine effeminate.
I don't get it. Wait, why? Why?
He played it so effeminate, but he's Wolverine because he has that healing factor.
Yeah, oh.
He regenerates. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, yeah. Now I get it. Like Wolverine, what the hell are you talking about?
Certainly not the actor.
His name was Ard, and here's something else.
I am Ard, supreme leader of the revolution and the next ruler of the world.
I just loved how he couldn't sit still.
Yes,
he's in his chair. He's like moving all
squirming
around.
Like a
9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very funny.
Welcome to the planet where we're all named 3 letters.
Yeah. He made this weird laugh. There you go. Well, it was after he got shot, and then he acted like it was no big deal. Yeah, it's good stuff. Here's you'll ruin everything, but he says it wrong. Enjoy.
You'll ruin everything.
You'll ruin everything.
You'll ruin everything.
Yeah, wouldn't you want to ruin things?
Tell me, Satan, Canada. Knock it off.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry.
Yeah.
The Stern trial.
Listen, Stern, change the plea to guilty. Throw yourself on the mercy of the court.
I told you, Charlie, I got an angle.
I've got an angle.
God, that's Eugene Levy right there.
Yeah. Pretty good.
I've got an angle, Catherine O'Hara.
Surprised she wasn't in this. So much SCTV people in this. Her.
Totally. And, yeah. She probably said, oh, do I have to do one of these, the voices for these big booby ladies? Thanks. I'll sit this one out.
Yeah. I'm waiting for, she was too close to doing Home Alone. She'll be fine. Let's see. This guy cracked me up.
Unless maybe the preschooler's prostitute ring. All the times he's so dope disguised as a nun.
So that's Squidward? That's the voice of Squidward.
Yes, sure.
Crazy. That doesn't...
Unless maybe the preschooler...
Bump-ass.
Yeah, bump-ass. Bumpus. Is it Bumpus or bump-ass?
It's probably Bumpus, yeah.
Poor guy. I'd get that changed. Nobody cares. Sure. Get it.
Not me. Look at the career he's had.
Here's a
you don't forget a name like Bumpus.
No, Bumpus stays in your head. Here's Harold Ramis. Haven't heard his voice in a while.
Just we turned it up a little too high.
Yeah. You can hear that.
God,
there's no hiding that voice.
I know.
Rest in peace, dude. Like, what a... Yeah. Like, he had no range whatsoever as an actor, but I just want him in everything.
It didn't matter, yeah. It just didn't matter. Plus, he's made so many great films as a director and writer. He's just a... What a loss.
For my money, it's all about how he just drops into the movie Knocked Up. Mm-hmm. He just like out of nowhere, suddenly he's Seth Rogen's dad. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right. I want that to be true in reality.
Yeah. He made one of the greatest movies of all time. Groundhog Day never gets old. That's a movie that should get old because it repeats itself all day. But it's so good. I'd love it. All right, here's Eugene Levy doing things.
First Earth chick we see in 10 years, and he's got to make a play for.
That means Dan Levy was like 5 years old then, just walking around. Yeah.
David.
Ew. All right, here's a great choking sound. All right, there's that. You like that? Yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, not really.
I mean, it's as close as I got to anything that truly grossed me out. Nothing else grossed me out. So it was kind of a movie where they want to gross me out, but it wasn't gross.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to gross you out with animation, right? Because it's animation.
It can be done. So there are certain animes that truly flip me out. Like I'll watch something like Ninja Scroll. It's older, but that's legit. Like, ugh, my gosh, these guys. Yeah. But there's something about some Japanese animation that can give me the willies. But for the most part. It's animation, man.
I had a hard time when Family Guy first started animating Throw Up.
Oh, yeah, when they all barfing in the living room that one time?
Yeah, for barfing for like 20 minutes straight.
Yeah, that was rough.
For me, it's actually more like what they're saying as you see things on South Park.
Hmm. Oh,
okay.
Makes you feel a little grody. isn't there a South Park episode
there absolutely is.
Yeah. Brian watched it.
It's called Major Boobage. We watched it last night after watching this. Oh. It's season 12, episode 3. People get high on cat urine and hallucinate. And they hallucinate everything from heavy metal.
Including the Wind Riders, the convertible coming out of the space shuttle.
So do you get what I'm saying, Scott? It's not that I remembered seeing the animated cat urine, but I remember them saying they're huffing it. And that's grossing me out.
Yeah, it is gross. Huffing cat urine vapors.
It's explained in the show. Yeah, it's on HBO
Don't
Max.
Don't spoil it.
Or you can just 12, go to episode South, 3.
You can just go to southpark.com.
Oh, really?
.cc.com. And yeah, they're on there.
Yeah, but they run commercials. Cool. I hate that.
One commercial. Yes.
Oh, well, that's one more than HBO Max will make me watch.
Really? I don't need to see. I just ran through it and I don't even see a commercial. I just went to the.
No, they used to. Commercial. Maybe you got a blocker going there, hacker boy.
After years of not watching Comedy Central because they couldn't get it streaming anywhere, I now have Paramount Plus, so I'm watching Comedy Central. You know what? I realized I did not miss The Daily Show having a bunch of commercials. I don't need that.
I don't like it. No, sir, I don't. I went when we were in Vegas. I was just reminded you turn on the TV and go, oh shit, it's all commercials, right? That's why I don't watch commercial television. I hate it. Can't stand it. All right, here's the dying stupid bird. All right, this is a great sound.
he died for like 20 minutes straight.
I think the flying mount is my best example of I wouldn't have hated this when I was a kid.
I mean, it's cool in theory, but that the mount itself is so bad. I agree with you. Like having a big Valkyrie mount is badass, but this thing was not a big Falcon mount.
That's like I don't know what that is. It's like an ostrich or something. Yeah. A naked ostrich.
You know what it's like? It's like a comedian's rubber chicken.
It's like a comedian's rubber chicken.
Yeah.
He's tough as nails though, because they kept trying to kill it. And I kept going. Oh no, they killed the mount.
Yeah,
it's like no, he's alive. No, they killed him out that time. No, they did.
Yeah, no, he was determined to get her up over that thing and dump her in there. He was gonna do it no matter what.
He was spurting blood out of his.
Yep, as soon as he.
He was spurting blood out of his neck.
Yeah,
and he was still trying to fly her up there. It was great.
He made me laugh, and that alone is a good deal. All right, well, we've completed our task there, and now we leap over here to this. This is the Film Sack Checklist. If they were paid by the nipple, the producers would be billionaires. Check. Make John Candy do everything. Check. And finally, sorry, lady, but your bird sucks.
Check. Yes.
Can I add one?
Yeah, of course.
Total number of deaths in the movie?
Yeah.
Seriously, total number of deaths? 69.
69. 69.
Nice. The trivia. Yeah.
Nice. Soundtrack grade. We need connections. Anybody Star Trek stuff in here or no?
So there is just one.
Yeah.
Just one. Can we find a way to finally make it right? Yeah. It's John Bruno. So you're gonna find him way down the credits of the movie. He's just listed as special effects.
Oh.
But he goes on to have a pretty stout career behind the camera. And he got a couple of credits on Star Trek Voyager.
Mm.
Specifically, the peak of his career, he's directing TV episodes, and he directed two episodes of Voyager, one called Fury and one called Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy.
Oh, that's cool. He hasn't done anything in a long time, animation department wise. Heavy Metal was the last thing he did, in fact, and he was sequence director for the Soft Landing episode. And then
it broke him.
And then that was it. Let's see if since then, art department up to 96, visual effects. Okay, that's where he stayed because he's got stuff all the way up to 2020. He's heavy into effects work. So
I feel like directing episodes of a syndicated TV show is pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. He's got, visual effects for Titanic, Avatar. He must be, Abyss and Terminator. He must be friends with Cameron. It's got to be some kind of connection there. Anyway, there you go. Like,
do you think he's the one who sketched out Rose?
I don't know. You think he is?
No, I don't think so. I will bet you that that sketch has a very you know, a very exciting story. Yeah, but it's like John Cameron himself sketched it or something.
Yeah, or James. You know what would have been cool is if John Bruno would have said, or no, if she would have said, draw me like John Bruno does his French ladies or something like that. that would have been what I would want. Yeah, soundtrack great. I'm going to give it a G for great. I think it's great across the board.
Yeah.
It's got a good score. The music's all
without
great.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, and I looked it up. I looked it up. It was actually drawn by James Cameron. James Cameron, not only did he draw it, but James Cameron is left-handed. So he had to, like, that you can see him actually drawing it, like, you can see his hand.
Right.
And then they flipped it so that it looks like he's right-handed.
I didn't know he could
DiCaprio's draw. Right-handed.
Didn't know he could draw like that. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Not bad. Okay. Thought he was just all ideas and directing, but he can draw. Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up. 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
I just had that moment where I'm like, did I write a Twitter post? Oh, yeah. It's real short. Heavy metal. A completely degenerate society is focused on the balls.
Yeah.
Just yes. like a Saturday night. At
there it is.
There it is. Yep.
Ding, not ding, where ding, I thought ding. You were going to go today, but
I know. You still got there. Yeah. I should have taken that bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a bet.
I bet that your Twitter post today would end with nothing like a Saturday night at Ibbots.
Yeah.
seriously, they're focused on the balls.
Yeah. No, they are.
Balls. Oh, they are. No, I'm just saying, like, all the naked women in this thing, nothing like a Saturday night at Ibbots.
Yeah, nothing like that. Brian Dunaway, your turn.
Heavy metal, a shadow shall fall over the universe and evil will grow in its path and death will come from the skies. Oh, and my dork is hanging out. Hashtag boobies.
Oh, I like your dork. Just kidding. Is that what they call that whale? Me? They refer to a whale penis as a dork, like in a scientific way. I think so.
That's what a whale penis is called, a dork.
Yeah. Big old 12 foot freaking dork. You know,
jeez. Here, could you hold my dork for a minute?
Yeah. Thanks. Hold my dork. used to say that when I'd pass my kid around. Just kidding. All right, let's see. What else we got going here? Oh, yeah. Brian Ibbett, give us yours.
You got me. Heavy metal. You are going to have actual heavy metal in your heavy metal movie, right? Right? Is this thing on?
Always a good touch. Jeff Goldblum, it's excellent work. Alternative title time, folks. Yeah, that's right. Just handed this. The Hope for Rotoscope was the original title. And then finally, and this depends on how much you're paying attention to who's in this movie, Levy Metal.
Levy Metal, that's sure. genius.
Get it? Because Eugene Levy Metal, get it?
Yeah. Okay. Genius.
This is the best I could do. Moving on to some emails. These emails came to us at filmsack@gmail.com, and in particular, we got this one from Jonathan. There's a little short one here where he says, currently listening to Willy's Wonderland's episode, or the Willy's Wonderland episode, and to answer Randy, emoji is a French word. That's Jonathan from France. Yeah, I didn't know that. That was news to me.
I don't remember it coming up.
I don't remember talking about emojis either. I don't remember that. That's interesting.
We had some
but that is a good tidbit. Suck it, Randy.
I do find it funny that regularly we get an email where someone says, you know, Randy said this or that. And it turns out, no, I didn't. It was like Brian Dunaway.
It could have been.
Because it gives me such an out-of-body experience where I'm like,
right.
No, I didn't.
I remember hearing that. Did that come out of my mouth?
Wow.
Could have happened today. All right, moving on to this email from Brandon, who says, I grew up in a glass shop, business, residential, and automotive.
Dangerous. Be careful.
Don't throw stones.
No kidding. Yeah. Said if we had
Wait,
gone.
Just a minute, Scott Johnson.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Whoa, no.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for emoji.
Yeah.
And it says it comes
now
Japanese.
He's himself.
Yeah, it's Japanese.
Oh. Well, then how does this,
now
why
you're
is this French
yourself
listener?
About something that you don't remember saying.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
But wait, there's a this guy. Well, he's in France. He's a French name, and I assumed he had his. So now we got to find out what's really going on. If it's Japanese, fine. If it's not, fine.
Picture,
but hey,
yeah, it's the Japanese words E for picture and moji for character.
Okay,
picture character.
All right. Well, take that, French man, Jonathan. Tell me
what the hell just happened.
I don't know.
It's like a purely invented work of art as an email.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sounds about right.
Beautiful.
Brandon wrote in and says, I grew up in a glass shop. We had, if we had gone to the hospital every time somebody needed stitches, we would all live there. So, and this is about duct tape in the Willy's Wonderland. He says, so duct tape would have that shit over wounds for weeks at a time. Because if you took it off early before the glue had degraded enough, the wound would just get pulled open again. Not great for scarring, but definitely cheaper than and surprisingly effective. Just a bit of Neosporin if it's really bad to keep it clean. So he's saying, like, yeah, you cut yourself, you put some...
We used electrical tape in my house.
Really? Never used tape of any kind. That's just insane. Yeah,
not everybody can afford Band-Aids, Scott.
Jeez.
Like you. Jeez.
Yeah, this fancy house I lived in.
Super glue to close closed wounds.
And now they do that at the doctors. They actually put super glue there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a special kind, though, isn't it?
Super glue is made in France.
It's a French term. Glue. Yeah. It's pronounced super glue.
A Japanese expat went to France. And
my name is Randy.
Yeah. Nice. Nicely done. All right. Next movie we are doing. Oh, by the way, filmsack@gmail.com for those emails. Our next movie is Zathura. Yeah, that's right. A board game in space. Woo.
Yeah.
John Favreau directed thing. And it's actually, my memory is it's good, but I don't remember.
I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was good.
All right. See if it holds up.
I stand
up.
By it.
We have this like ongoing debate for like 15 years now, which goes, hey, I saw a Jon Favreau thing and I really liked it. And someone else goes, is Jon Favreau a really good filmmaker? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
That's like, I guess you just have to watch everything he's ever done to see if you can ever come up with an example of not good.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, you see Singles and you go, amazing. You see Iron Man 1, incredible. You see Iron Man 2 and go, but not that, you know, I mean, and whatever. And he's helped revive Star Wars on the TV in a way that I didn't expect. And
right. You know, the guy's a great show he does with the cooking show.
The chef show.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very good.
Such a great show. Yeah.
I was just talking to someone yesterday who hadn't, who knew nothing about Sam Raimi except like the name on movies. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what's you need to watch that episode of the chef show where with him and Sam Raimi. Because Jon Favreau gets like a very interesting interview of Sam Raimi while they're cooking together.
I'd be interested in seeing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
He still does that show? That's a thing?
I mean,
there hasn't been a new season in a couple of years, but.
But there's like three or four seasons.
Okay. Yeah. But I feel like it's something they could just pick up and rebuild at any time.
Yeah. You get the feeling that someone's filming Jon Favreau, you know, in a documentary style pretty much every day of his life.
Yeah, he's always, I don't know, like having him in all these newer movies as, what's the character? Fatty, not Fatty.
Happy Hogan?
Yeah, Happy Hogan, not Fatty Hogan. I don't know why I thought of that. But
Happy Hogan.
We were watching, or somebody in the house was watching Friends the other day, and I was like, oh, there was this whole swing where he
MMA.
Was...
MMA.
Yeah, he was Monica's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's not right, not Happy Hogan. Happy Hogan is the guy from First Avenger, isn't he? Hold on a second.
Happy... Gilmore. Happy.
Happy Hogan is the guy. No, it is Happy Hogan. Okay. Who's the guy that was in the first Avenger as one of Captain America's buddies? And it's the actor we see. It's the guy with the piercing blue eyes. Dang it.
Right.
Oh, I don't know.
Shoot.
I'm looking
Happy Henry.
Not Happy Henry.
Happy Gilmore. Happy. No. Dang it. All right.
Happy
Slappy.
I'll find it. I'll
Happy Slappy.
Well, let us know what you find because we have to have closure on that.
And another cool thing about being Jon Favreau is you can just like insert yourself into whatever you want in whatever. Yeah. So like in Book of Boba Fett, he's the voice of this this big black Mandalorian. Mm. Like this mean, mad Mandalorian. I don't want to say too much about him, like because you haven't seen Book of Boba Fett yet, Scott. But his name is Paz Vizsla, and it's like, you know, it's John. You could hear John Favreau when you're listening for it. You know,
yeah.
Dum Dugan is who I was thinking of.
Okay.
Not happy at all. He's Dum Dum.
No, he's not happy.
Well, it's good. You can be happy Dum Dum.
You can be a happy Dum Dum.
Happy.
Yeah. You can be a happy Dum Dum.
Yeah. Yes. Remember Dum Dum Suckers?
Oh, those are so still get them at the bank anytime I go.
I know. I used to. Well, most
sure,
of the,
those are for the kids. Give me my sucker.
Most of my bad teeth are owed to those things, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they were bad. All right. Well, there you go. Zathura, next week, right here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com is our website. FilmSack@gmail.com is how you email us. And you can find us on Twitter. Poke us there at FilmSack. If you've noticed lately, less like GIF-a-thons when I'm watching one of the movies via that Twitter account. It's because HBO Max, Prime, Netflix, and Hulu have all put in stuff to make it so you can no longer capture footage from a browser.
Oh, no way, really?
Yeah.
That's easy.
You can get
around it. How are you, like, from a browser?
Yeah. Yeah, because
easy. Just turn off hardware encoding.
Oh, is that, will that do it?
Yeah.
Oh, software decode. Wow.
There's no encryption in software decoding.
Well, they used to not care, and now they care, though, and they've flipped it on or whatever. So I will go in there and
do that. You can't stop me.
All right. I'm down. I tried every browser, too, so let's see. Software, where the hell is even that? I don't know where that is.
Yeah, just look for the settings, hardware, turn off hardware acceleration, boom.
That's
Am I the only person in the world who still has like a 14-year-old version of Fraps that I keep up and running?
You might. I don't know.
That's you, brother.
Yeah, you got to do you.
Got to go deep on some news groups to find out how to make it work on the latest version of Windows.
There you go. All right. Well, Brian, you may have saved my life here. Okay. Expect more gifts in the future, everybody, because whenever that turned on, I was like, oh, I haven't been able to do it since. All right. Anyway,
I thought you were going to say that there's throwing strikes on you on Twitter or something.
No. Yeah. No, none
no
of that.
No more gifts from our movies.
Yeah. Screw that. It's such a dumb thing for them to
worry
about.
And I'll keep finding a way around.
I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop people from capturing entire things and putting them on their Plex servers.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. But that's not what I'm doing. I'm just doing a screenshot. How does it hurt them for me to be promoting their shit?
When it's so easily circumvented, I'm just like, stop it.
Yeah.
Just quit it.
Well, look.
Stop it.
People make computers, and we're people too. So we're in. We're smart. We are smart. Make it go. All right. where the hell was I? Oh, that's it. Leave us reviews wherever you go on your podcast directories of various sorts. That'd be great for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Sexual ecstasy with mechanical assistance.
Ooh, gross. Circumcised robot.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.